Let's go. You're listening to KZSU, Stanford University's FM radio station, broadcasting across the Yay area on 90.1 and across the world at KZSU.org.
Welcome to Brands, Beats, and Bites, hosted by Daryl D.C. Cobbin and Larry Taman. Brands, Beats, and Bites stands at the intersection of brand, tech, and culture. We bring you interesting people and insightful points of view on what's popping and not popping in marketing, tech, culture, and beyond. DC and Larry are fascinated with the stories and people behind some of the best marketing in the business. No matter how dope your product, if your marketing sucks, your company may suck too. They both serve as managing partners at marketing consultancy Brand Positioning Doctors, where they help companies large and small, tech and non-tech, build better marketers so they can build great brands.
Kat, you've had innumerable examples of successes in your life. On this question, I'd like to know of none of those. I am interested in your biggest F up and what you learned from it.
Sure. And I think, you know, let's not call it an F up. Let's, you know, because every opportunity is, every F up is an opportunity to learn and be better.
Yeah, agree with that. But it can still be an F up though. It can still be F up. You can turn it into something.
Yeah, and yes. I thought about this, and this is actually my first time kind of sharing this. So when I have been fortunate enough to move around in my professional career, working for people that wanted me there.
Ah, okay.
Right, got that it. Hired me in and believed in me and trusted me and you know, accepted me. Even when I went to, Viacom, I was recruited in by, you know, the president at the time deliberately wanted someone from outside the industry because he wanted someone to come in and sort of create the marketing organization of the future.
Yeah.
So I was, even though people were like, what, Sprint? Like he wanted me there.
Okay.
So probably around, I think it was 2015, my boss at the time left and a new boss came in.
Okay.
Now, that was a new experience for me. And I think where I effed up is that, you know, whenever there's a change in leadership or just a change in management, you really have to do your work to understand how that person works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, what their value system is.
Yeah.
What does success look like for them? You know, what kind of management relationship do they want? Do they want, you know, do they like people that work autonomously? Do they like to be well connected? Is it a very clear hierarchical relationship?
Yeah.
I didn't do that work because I never had to before.
Ooh, yeah.
I never had to before. So I wasn't reading the room. I wasn't understanding the politics.
Yeah.
Right. I wasn't clear on, the motivations.
Yeah.
You know, which were different. And so I didn't develop the type of relationship with my new boss that I've had with previous bosses. And eventually the relationship kind of fell apart. And I'll never forget. Right. Because back to your point about me calling you and me just like, you know, like just another thing. Like, you know, I'm used to people who I'm used to working with people that, you know, are open to opinions. Obviously, the final decision is theirs. But so I remember very clearly when the relationship pivoted, I had a meeting with my new boss and I decided to offer an opinion about something I didn't like.
Ah,
interesting.
And I literally saw, you know, this person's face change.
Oh, okay.
And the relationship was never the same. So, and then eventually it kind of disintegrated and I ended up leaving the company.
Okay.
So I would say that my biggest F up was honestly, when there are sea changes, you know, or management changes, not taking stock of the situation, right? Deciding what type of professional you need to be for that new management.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of going from there. That was a big F up. So I would say to everyone, right? New bosses, acquisitions, mergers, you know, it's almost like you're kind of, you know, evaluating the situation from scratch.
Wow.
Damn, that's good.
That was a big one. And I've never told, this is my first time telling that story.
Damn, that's good.
Well, we're so happy you shared it, because this is the kind of stories we love to share here. So other people, like what you've just shared, Caroline, is incredible. And I'm struck with the fact that, quite honestly, very bluntly, you were blessed that you never had a situation before like that, right?
And no, never.
Right? And because, you, like you said, you were always brought on by people and you work for them and the relationship was already there. So that's something that you just, you know, that was organic to you. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a situation, you know, later in your career when you're pretty high up, where now you go, this is different. And you didn't even realize it was different until it was too late almost.
Exactly. I'd always gone where I was wanted.
Right.
And mm-hmm. I just wasn't prepared for the politics.
Right.
Yeah.
And because I always went when I went where I was wanted, I never had to play the game 100%.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? The people I worked with knew me and knew what I was capable of. And yeah. So I did not read the room and I did not do my homework. And that, I think, you know, is essentially something that cost me a job, basically. Mm. And it ended up all for good.
Yeah.
Right.
Because if I hadn't been disrupted, I would have never had the time to jump fully into this content space. So everything happens for a reason.
It does.
Right. So the next time I see my former boss, I'm going to thank him profusely.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it was actually a blessing in disguise. But yeah, it was definitely a learning experience for sure. And it's the other thing I'll say, and I'm deviating slightly, is that, you know, a lot of us get confused about who we are. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us start to self-identify with who we are in the workplace, right? With our titles, mm-hmm. with, you know, well, I'm the VP of the, you know, like we get, right. you know, it becomes inextricably linked.
Yep.
Right. And that's how we define ourselves based on our workplace successes. Mm-hmm. So when we leave the workplace, a lot of times people don't know who they are.
That's right.
People don't know who they are.
Nope.
They don't know what makes them tick or what they're passionate about. Mm-hmm. And so I actually had to go, you know, so I'm, you know, going through my career, like, you know, oh, I'm good. And I'm you know, I'm good. And people like me. And then I leave and I'm like, wait, what happened? Like, what did I do wrong? Am I not as good as I thought I was? And,
yeah.
and so I go through this whole like self-evaluation of, you know, my skills, you know, and abilities. And I essentially had to, you know, almost rebuild my professional value system from the ground up.
Really interesting.
Rooted in my value system, what's important to me.
And you know what I was just going to bring up? You brought it up earlier. You always had your North Star though, right?
I always had my North Star.
Wow. So since you always had that, I think once you really have the ability to really, you know, because when you're right immersed in a situation, it's so hard to think. As you said, once you were removed from that situation, then you could really tap into that North Star. And it seems like you did right away, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly. And it's funny, when I started telling people, well, yeah, I'm going to shoot this film. And I'm telling you, so many people are looking at me cross-eyed.
Right. Like, what do you know about that? Right.
Like, yeah. What?
Yeah.
You're doing a film. Like, what do you know about that? You know, mm-hmm. even people in the industry were like, oh, girl, that's so cute. Good luck with that. You know, oh my God. And so, you know, and so I'm basically starting from scratch. I got no cred in filmmaking.
Right.
Like even now, like I'm sort of still kind of in relatively early stages, probably a transition mid, but so I had to rebuild my, you know, my credibility in this space from nothing. Cause I was an executive, right?
Right. You were a suit.
I was a suit. And I'll never forget, I was at the American Black Film Festival in Miami, and that must have been 2019. Mm-hmm. And Jeff Friday, who's the founder of ABFF, who I've known for years because I knew him as a sponsor. I was sponsoring that festival.
Right.
And now I have a project in the festival. And so I run into him and he looked at me, he goes, "You're really serious, aren't you?" And I'm like, hell yeah, I'm serious. Yes, I'm serious. And so it's taken me some, it's taking me time to kind of build my credibility in the film industry also.
Well, you've done it, which is amazing.
Not yet. I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
You're on your path. Let's say that. Dee, exactly. We ready for the next question?
I'm going to make one quick comment, LT, and then we'll go to the next question. Thank you, brother. So brand nerds, what Caroline has just shared is a story that has insights that you can benefit from for your entire career. One of them I want to put a fine point on, and it's this. Do not conflate who you are as a person with the seat your ass occupies.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love it.
Don't conflate those two. Because somebody's butt was in that seat before you got there.
Yep.
And somebody's butt is going to be in that seat after you leave.
So true.
Yeah. So I just wanted to mention that. All right. You've done a lot. Many campaigns, Trimble, many awards, not only for you, but for the firms and teams that you've been a part of. If you look up and you Google success in the creative space in the UK and beyond, we're going to find your name somewhere in that mix, Trimble. But for this question, I'd like to know absolutely zippo of any. I want to know your biggest F up or paying my respects to my brothers and sisters in the UK. What was the project or initiative you had that was the worst example of going pear-shaped, and what did you learn from it?
I mean, look, there's all of us have had projects that have just gone south. And so I'm gonna pick not necessarily a specific event or something, but just a kind of a bigger example, I think, when things have really started to go wrong. Mm-hmm. And when you've really reached the edges of your own abilities mm-hmm. to solve the problems, and you may be a part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, look, things go well, things go badly. That happens a bit to everyone. I think that there's a different experience when you really have to look at yourself and say, to what extent am I in the way here? Mm. And that, I think, is a different feeling from, whoops, it went wrong, or we timed the market wrong, or we ran the campaign late. And I've got a ton of funny stories ranging from typos going out in, you know, multi-pillion ads to having arguments with clients that went on to get hired at some other giant firm and ended up at Amazon running the world and all those kind of things. But, and I think it's in the transition between 18 feet and rising and rising. Mm-hmm. So it's also very personal. We launched 18 feet and rising as in kind of Fallon's image in Adam and Eve, DDB's image, in the image of, you know, in the States, it would have been Crispin Porter at the time, Droga5, Anomaly, you know, these kinds of agencies, basically these incredible creative independent shops. Mm-hmm. And when we got to 2015, we realized that was a strategy that was running out of steam.
Mm-hmm.
That the advertising agency as a need, was, and top of the funnel marketing like that, and the ability to take mass marketing and influence business outcomes was really starting to drop.
Mm.
And the amount of times we were doing campaigns, it was almost like a cost of goods sold rather than the unlocks I was telling you about earlier, where you're taking something and you're really, really unleashing value. Suddenly it was like, who are these for, these campaigns? Are they like for the staff? It's to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
It's because we think we should. And we were noticing that creeping in. And at that point, we decided it was better. Our idea was that we would sell the company into a group and become part of an integrated offering. And at that point, the company was valued quite highly. And we made that transaction basically and sold a chunk of the company into a group And there are a couple of things happening around that. One, this is now me as the CEO. I led us into that. So I led the breakaway and we led the founding of the company. And then I led us into this move to say, right, I think we need to go into a group now and somehow through the 360 idea or being part of other communications disciplines, I think we can create more value for clients, basically. But the truth was, I didn't really believe in that strategy. And I didn't have a better idea. And it was almost like, okay, what are your options? Your options are join the whole leg approach. But I kind of knew since the 80s, the whole leg approach only works for a certain type of client. Mm-hmm. Usually very big, usually looking for efficiencies where you can put teams all over the world or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's pretty common now. And I kind of convinced us all that there might be a smaller client like that could benefit from that, more of a medium-sized range of clients that were available to that. So we sort of created this false, business plan in a way around it. And as you guys will know, when you're doing those kinds of deals, it's about what happens next, right, after those that determines its success or not. And we were almost ended up in a point of view where on the one hand, as a business, wanting to run exactly as we were, and on the other hand, trying to join this group and just trying to get the deal done. And it ended up we got the deal done. It was almost like that was the end point, and then stared up and realized I didn't have a strategy. I didn't have a plan for integration with this company. We didn't have a way of bringing the cultures together, of taking it to market. Because I think in some respects, if you'd have gone to market with it hard enough and loud enough, something might have happened. You might have been able to, start seeing some patterns that you might have been able to work with. And so as a result, they ended up acquiring a chunk of the company. Mm-hmm. We spread a lot, all of us made some money. Mm-hmm. But after that, the sort of value of the deal completely dropped. Mm-hmm. And we, over the time period, then subsequently then lost a bunch of people. We lost a bunch of clients. And if I hadn't have done that, I think there would have been a board meeting that's time for you to go. And what happened, actually, kind of in a way, what happened was I realized I either need to come up with a strategy with this group, already to come up with a different idea that we all believe in, that we can get in behind. Mm. And so I kind of, in my own head, fired myself.
Mm.
And said, okay, you kind of been responsible for a bunch of value destruction. It was valued at this price. It's come together. Fairly classic post M&A stuff, actually. Right. I kind of read about it. We all think it's going to be great if we get together. Right, we're together. How's it going? Oh, it's the same, if not worse, than it was before. Whoops. It kind of came back in and said, right, what is it, what is it that we can really do here? And took the company back out of the group in 2018 and formed Dan Rising and turned it into a creative ventures firm, which we, passionately believe in, and creative capital and all these kind of stuff, which we're incredibly excited about and do now. So I sort of went back in and reimagined everything. But at that point, around 2016, mid, late 2016, 2017, I think, it would have been one of those CEOs that if it would have been big enough to be on CNBC or something, I think the reporting would have been like, when are they going to get rid of this guy? He's steered it in there without a kind of a follow-on idea.
Yeah.
And this company now appears to be clear. I tell you, the feeling of it was we were clinging on to an old strategy. And it's that kind of doing the same thing over and over again, hoping you might get a different result, that if you go at it harder or if you come at it with more enthusiasm, that it might get better. But the reality was I could see the market was changing somewhere else. I could see our strengths were changing. I could see our hearts were in a different place. Mm-hmm. But I didn't quite know how to get us from A to B. And the truth is, if that was, as it was briefly, a London Stock Exchange listed company, it was taken private into private equity.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to take the penalty again. you know, you just you get shown the plank. So I was in a lucky position where I could kind of do that to myself, I suppose. But it's I was at the edges of my own imagination, and I did a lot of asking around, you know, what to do, and it was pretty I was pretty lost for a little while in there as the CEO. It was pretty scary time. You know, you talked about that foot going down and the belief, knowing it was going to land. Well, I got to tell you, I had a bunch of dreams. I was flying this plane, you know, 4 meters above the ground. With and it had no seats in it, and it was kind of running out of fuel. You know, that was the kind of emotional. That was the emotional feeling of it, and I think that's what failure looks like. Failure isn't when something goes wrong. Failure is when you are lost for where you're taking something next. Yeah, so that's real failure. Believe me, that's a different, that's a you know, advanced level experience. So that's how I would, I think if someone was to ask me, oh, should I worry about failure? Don't worry too much. Things basically always go wrong. But if you're finding yourself at sea, don't be frightened to fire yourself and come back. Come back with some new ideas. Like imagine, and the other thing I would, you know, just take everything out. Take all your assumptions off the table about how it's working. Everything that you've done before has got you this far. So just what if you changed it? You know, what if you changed every element of it and you were kind of hanging on to so many of those things? I heard this, I know this is, this gets said a lot, but it was really true of that moment, which is, you know, you don't conquer the mountain, you conquer yourself. And that's it. You've got to let go of things you think, if you let go of, they're going to stop working. The foot's going to go down. The floor's not going to be there. You've got to kind of, you've got to abandon things, try things, not be afraid to really stop things that had, because often those things make you successful up until that point. And I think that's if I know something now before, it's whenever it's starting to work, it's probably time to rethink it immediately. You see what I mean? Like, because what will happen is it reaches a level of predictable success, and then suddenly you're out of sync, you know, and because you've let it, you've kind of ridden that predictable success, or you've been arrogant enough to think, oh, I know what we do here, we repeat this. And what's incredible about markets is, what's incredible about the consumer, the audience, is that they are ahead of you, like permanently. They're like, right, it's like, it's like my 8-year-old son is born smarter than you, and they're always ahead of wherever you're going. And it's
that's right.
And so I think that's the big thing. And it doesn't help because when you've done a big deal, you also get a level of ego success. You're like, wow, I've made it. Obviously, I got this far, kind of thing. And it's gone from very early roots, and suddenly it's worth a lot of money. And you're like, wow, I obviously know what I'm kind of doing here. And you drift into that sort of thing. So I think truthfully, any CEO wants to talk about failure. I think they're going to have to start talking about when they reach the edges of their own capabilities to have a new idea about where the company should go. And I suspect those that are successful either do that process behind the scenes somehow, or they're alive enough to know they've got to be keep rethinking it. Because you have a lot of control as a CEO as well.
Right.
So people,
and responsibility, right?
You walk into a room and say, hey, look, I think we should do it like this. People say yes. They don't go, listen, I've got a daft idea. How about we don't do any of those things? Because they're looking for leadership from you, and partly because they're assuming you've done you're doing the work, and partly because you're top of the food chain. I hope that's a helpful lap around failure.
That's deep. That is heavy.
Sorry, we can go too deep. We'll come back up. We'll come back up.
We're good. I'll say this one thing before I kick it over to Larry. It's this: we sometimes, Trumbull, talk about when one's strength taken to an extreme becomes a weakness, and it happens without our even noticing it. We're lauded for our strengths. They've gotten us to where we have gotten to. We have successes. We have markers that we can point to and say, the company is of this value in part because of my strength. Mm. We made these decisions that were the right decisions in part because of my strength. And then that thing runs away and all of a sudden your strengths can't get you there anymore. And you're lost.
Mm.
You're lost as to what to do.
So
this question is, with all of your successes, Jimmy, and you've had a plenty, what's your biggest F up? And what did Jimmy Smith learn from that F up?
That's easy.
All right.
I was working at Muse Cordero Chin.
Okay, yeah.
First multicultural ad agency in the US. And Joe's Black, Joe Muse, Mavis Cordero, Mexican, and David Chin, Chinese. Mm-hmm. And so you'd be walking up and through those halls and somebody could be speaking, you know, Spanish, Mandarin, you Korean, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this account, Smith's Grocery Store. Okay. It's Smith's something something groceries or something like that.
Okay.
And no relation, no ownership stake by me, just Smith's whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for the Latino market.
Okay.
And we had, you know, I presented like three ideas or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And me and the team. And one of them was this one idea. And I'm going to tell you what it is. But one of them was this one idea. And Mavis said, that's the idea. Okay. That's the one. And I'm like, even then I was like, oh, no, you sure? I'm thinking maybe this one might be. No, that one, Jimmy, that one is the one. She's the only Latina in the room at the time. She's a partner.
Yeah.
And, you know, well, I'm not going
to. Who am I?
You
know,
Okay.
We did show it to you. So, you know, but right. I think it probably should be this one. And she was adamant to choose this one. So, okay. So we sold it to the client. That joint got yanked after, I don't know, an hour. It might have been
record time.
It hit the airwaves, their phones and whatnot blew up, and that sucker was gone. It was a 30-second commercial, and this is what got yanked.
Okay.
It's the whole grocery store thing had everything under one roof. So you could get your laundry done there, you could get your dry cleaning, you could banking.
Okay.
Everything could be done at that store along with your grocery shop.
Sounds great.
Mm-hmm. So what it did for in the Latino community at the time, the women did most of the shopping, grocery shopping and all of that kind of stuff. So it took a lot of made it so that the women didn't have to go, okay, I got to go to the bank. Now I got to go to the laundry.
Okay. Yeah.
It was all under one roof. So it was a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
So we had Lady Madonna statue, and she was praying to the Lady Madonna in the room of the house, and she's just praying, and a tear came on Lady Madonna's cheek.
Uh-oh.
and the Latina said, oh, and the next thing you know, she was in. That lasted about an hour. The next day, the client came. We apologized, and we got fired.
Wow!
We got fired.
Okay, now, so, where was Mavis in this now?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Mavis is not naming and claiming it.
You said, Jimmy, what's up with your idea?
I'm in Joe's office. I said, she's the one that wanted to do it. She's the one who told us that that's what we need to do. If somebody, being a black man, and we talking to something that, you know, basketball in Harlem or something like that,
yeah,
I'll be damned if I'm going to have a white person who knows nothing about black culture tell me What? Right. Yeah, I would have been mad. And I've had it happen. They said, look, they're trying to tell you, white dude trying to tell you something they know nothing about.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I was doing the, you know, I was listening to not only the one of the partners of the company, but somebody who was from that culture, who's Latina, Mexican. Uh-huh. And so I learned from that you got to go with your track record. You got to go with your instincts and consider the source of who is giving that information, provided that information. I learned from that. I don't care if it's a boss. I don't care who it is. If I feel funny about it, I ain't doing it. You ain't gonna have me ass out looking like a nut. So that was my biggest faux pas, and learned. Fortunately, haven't had one like that since. And so there you go.
That's a great story, Jimmy.
That is a great story. That's a great story, Jimmy.
And I think, you know, what's cool about that is not only that you learned that at a young age, but that's your only one, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that's, I think, as you were talking about before, without getting too deep here, we have messages that we get. And your message was, you better follow your instincts from now on. And you're better carrying through it.
Better follow that pilot light that everybody's got.
Yep.
And on top of that, this is just not my pilot light, but who's telling me, suggesting or instructing or whatever. Because I'm still about, you know, LeBron James sitting up there saying, well, you know, if I'm doing an ad with him and he's saying, well, no, I wouldn't do it like this. And I'm thinking, well, it should be done like this. I'm not going to tell, that's LeBron James. He knows more than I would. But by the same token, if it's a much lesser somebody who's not on the basketball tip or on the, you know, whatever we're working on, you know, we work on Microsoft and whatever and whatnot. If I know that's not the expert, then now Mavis is an expert. You would think.
Yeah.
She missed that. And Mavis, if you listen to this, you know you missed that one. You know that. But I didn't get fired or nothing because Joe knew it. Joe was in the meeting. He knew.
Right. Do you got any follow-up?
I also learned from that it's not the end of the world when you do fuck up.
Right.
Mm.
Right.
That was just as important. Huge. You know?
That is that what a great point.
Pass away, you know, and I learned from it, grew from it, and Dan Wyden is a lot like that. One of his things is, well, if you fuck up, at least you learn something. That's
right.
Dan Wyden 101. And I learned, you know, I didn't know that's like an engineer's thing. They get just as excited. The good engineers get just as excited when whatever they're working on doesn't work.
Yes.
As they do.
Yes. When it does work.
Because, you know, that they, I learned. Okay.
Yes.
That doesn't do this and that and that. And that's just as valuable as the stuff that does work.
Ooh, love that. What, because that definitively says, I got to go in a different direction. That's really what it comes down to.
Yep.
Love it.
So one door is closed. One option is, you know, that play doesn't work.
Right.
So I learned to play and it doesn't work.
Oh, I love that story.
As LT has articulated eloquently, your career lineage, my brother, lots of successes, but we don't want to hear about those. I want to hear about the L, okay? The biggest F up you've had in your entire career and what you learned from it.
Got it. Now there's a couple places I can go from this because I'm like, just as I've had lots of wins and I've spoken of the wins in interviews and in conversations and over a glass, over a cold glass on a summer day.
That's good. We don't want to hear about none of them. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Right here we talk about the L's.
That record.
So getting to the L's and, you know, when I think about some of the biggest kind of mistakes or misdirections and kind of what I learned. One of them that, you know, I think on the surface felt like a win, and I actually had it for a long time as bullets on my resume, and it still might be at the very bottom of a win. And looking back, it was a horrible decision. So, even to tell this story, I'm going to go a little bit back to Rochester, New York, kind of my home, and then I'm going to go forward. When I head back, growing up in Rochester, New York, there was three companies. They were huge.
Yep.
This is the late 80s and early 90s. You have Rochester, New York, or you have Kodak, and they all end and start with the same letter, by the way. You can track along with me.
Wow.
Kodak, Xerox, Bar Shalom. If you think about the percentage of people that were employed, including my father, who eventually got laid off at Kodak, by those three companies alone, it pretty much was everybody.
Right.
Now let's focus in on Kodak. Kodak was that perfect example of not understanding the marketplace in which they play. Mm-hmm. For years, they thought that they were in the film development business.
Yep.
Develop film, and they make a ton of money on it, and it's so profitable.
Yep. Yep.
They never realized they were in the memories business.
Yep.
Right. That was something that I experienced that from my father working at Kodak for 20 plus years, getting laid off and having to figure out something else and kind of forced into early retirement. Now, fast forward, I'm working at General Mills, and I'm working on hamburger helper. 1 pound, one pan, one happy family. If you remember any of the advertising and Lefty, and there's a ton of different flavors, and it's a brand that leveraged variety, and that was kind of how they went into the marketplace.
Right.
Now, for that brand, for years and years, they've been losing relevancy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There's people are going in different directions. For some people, there could be health considerations. For some people, they're just not necessarily looking to that as their solution. Everywhere else in that same grocery store is coming up with more easy ways to do meals, and it's all about convenience. So across the store, there's just a million other things that you can do. There's fully prepared foods. You can buy a whole chicken and bring that. There's all of these other ways that you can kind of get to a easy to prepare meal.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was working on it. And then, at the time, and I was tasked with innovation. So I did the research, and my research came back, and not a surprise that guess what? If you put cheese in it, it works. And if you put more cheese in it, it's going to work even better.
Ooh.
So I went through this long process. You guys have been through this. We're going to look at the packaging. We're going to look at the consumer insights. And I'm looking backwards and all this data. And my answer that came out on the other side was man, we should do ultimate cheeseburger macaroni.
Let's get some more cheese.
I was like, now I did ultimate beef stroganoff. I took our top two flavors and I was like, you know what? We got these, but I'm going to make it hot. I'm
going to make it
ultimate. They went in the marketplace and they quickly became some of the top sellers. Mm-hmm. A few issues. One, there was some cannibalization, as you can imagine, between if you have cheeseburger, double cheeseburger, bacon cheeseburger, ultimate cheeseburger mac. The product that I put out sold, and I hit all my KPIs. The revenue came in, the incrementality was okay in year one, probably because of product placement in store, etc. And then as I went on, I'm like, hey, I had some of the highest liking scores. You guys remember all these studies? It should be bringing back some good memories or some memories and all those things. So I'm like, man, I did my job. I satisfied all the KPIs. Now, as I went back and look at that aisle as early as last week,
mm-hmm.
today the space has been shrunken considerably.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they make a ton of money because it's some noodles and a seasoning packet in the box, so the margins are great, their space is shrinking. And if you know anything about the grocery store, that space is dollars. For each incremental facing you get, you're going to make more money.
Yep.
The Kraft macaroni and cheese folks were pushing this way. And then all of a sudden you see today, it's a fraction of what that space used to be and what that business used to be. So me going back and looking at that, while I thought the problem, and I guess, I don't know how the saying goes, if I had an hour to save the world, I spend 59 minutes defining the problem. I defined the problem narrowly tied to the KPIs that I had, which is get a high liking score, get something that's gonna sell, get something that the sales teams wants. When the real problem actually echoed back on Coke was we actually need to reimagine this brand mm-hmm. for the next generation, define its usefulness, and expand. So while, you know, it's interesting, while, you know, on the surface, it was a success in terms of like, I hit all my KPIs and mm-hmm. actually probably helped me to get promoted. Like it was, you know, it looked really good on the surface. In actuality, if I was in charge of innovation, I should have reinvented that brand, defined mm-hmm. a brand stretch, thought about this idea of that working, hardworking family who's looking at solutions, different parts of the store. There's a million other things I could have looked at. And what I ended up doing eventually got DQ'd or discontinued
right.
out of the store. Then, you know, so looking back, I think that's an example of a failure that at the time I thought was a success.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting.
So what, from your innovation hat, you failed from a,
from my business side, 100% from the innovation side. I actually succeeded close in at giving right. the sales team something to sell. I hit all the close in KPIs. I didn't yeah. have a long-term view. And to be honest, I wasn't really incentivized to have a long-term view. I wasn't incentivized to do the hard work to reimagine that brand and put themselves in categories and think about healthier ingredients and think about organic. And you think yep. about the organic noodles that now live right next door. There's a whole brand that popped up that's right. taking a big bite out of, you know, mac and cheese. They have Annie's, which now lives there in that mac and cheese category as well. Like it was short-sighted. It was successful in the short term, but in the long term, it's death by a thousand cuts to a brand that needed to reinvent itself around this idea of convenience and leverage that latent equity that brand had to grow into something different. I mean, I wasn't willing to kill what it was to allow it to kind of grow into the butterfly it needed to become.
Got it. Makes sense.
If you wish to contact us, our email is brandsbeatsbytes@kzsu.stanford.edu. Again, that is brands, BRANDS, beats, BEATS, bytes, BY as in yellow, TES @kzsu.stanford.edu.